From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM later on tonight. Oh, yes, those open lines. And did you do a deal with the devil hotline? Oh, boy. Here's what's happening. Hackers have apparently targeted the voter registration systems of more than 20 states in recent months, according to Homeland Security. This disclosure comes amid heightened concerns that foreign hackers might undermine voter confidence in the integrity of U.S. elections. Federal officials and many cybersecurity experts have said it would be nearly impossible for hackers to alter an election's outcome because the election systems are very decentralized and generally not connected to the Internet. Well, don't say that to Bev Harris from Black Box Voting, who insists that some of these boxes can be tampered with. Hillary Clinton has gained ground on Donald Trump, who has slipped in key measures of the presidential race after the first debate, and this is from a Fox News poll, the conservative cable network. Clinton is ahead of Trump by 3 percentage points. Now, there's a margin of error there, but nonetheless, she is gaining ground since the debate. Hurricane Matthew grew into a powerful Category 5 storm late Friday as it crossed the Caribbean Sea on a course that could have it pounding Jamaica within days. The center of the hurricane was projected to pass just east of Jamaica early Monday, but the storm was large enough that it could affect the entire island, and the first effects of the storm might be felt starting Saturday. What's happening in Southern California? A swarm of earthquakes that rattled the Salton Sea area earlier this week has increased the probability of a major quake hitting Southern California. Now, the California Office of Emergency Services has issued an earthquake advisory warning residents and officials in Ventura, San Diego, San Bernardino, Riverside, Orange, Los Angeles, Kern, and Imperial counties that there was a greater possibility of a major earthquake through October 4th. Let's check in with Stan Deo, an expert on earth changes. Stan, what do you see out there? What do you think?
Well, look, I've put up on my website on the show images page, which we normally use for your show, that I've put an enlargement showing where the fault areas in California are that USGS says are prone to that. And I show the end of the San Andreas Fault going to the Salton Sea, where it stops. And then you skip down a little bit, you see all the earthquakes dribbling down toward the Imperial Fault, which runs into Mexicali. Now, that's why they put that warning out, that there's a lot of activity that appears to be maybe joining the San Andreas to the Imperial Fault. And that's kind of dangerous, because really I think that that's the beginning of other earthquakes happening all the way up to San Andreas. I show that image there, image 13 on the show, and then I go to 14 to show more of the suburbs that might be affected by this, with the arrows pointing to the earthquakes in the Salton Sea. I'm impressed with that. You know, at the same time, right now in the last 7 days, we've had a lot of big quakes on the other side of the Pacific, kind of just directly across the Pacific from California, from Fiji, Samoa, all the way through New Zealand down to Macquarie Island. And this shows the instability of the plate on that side. So I'm wondering if we're going to see reciprocity over on our side, all the way up it looks like to the Juan de Fuca in Oregon there. We've had a number of quakes there that have been quite interesting. 5.0s is just off the coast of Oregon and the Juan de Fuca plate, which is not good. So I'm kind of thinking we may see some activity here shortly.
Well, Stan, earthquake experts, the late Jim Berklin, folks like yourself, have been predicting and talking about a huge one. I mean, could this be the time?
Well, you know, it's kind of a guesswork, but I'm saying with the things happening up in the Juan de Fuca plate right up at the top of where it goes into Eureka and all the way down to Mexicali there, it does seem like that whole fault is very busy and starting to crack. I mean, if you take a piece of plexiglass and you start to bend it to break it, you know how in the light you can see little fissures starting, but
yes,
not the big break, until all of a sudden you've bent it enough that, bang, it releases. And I think a lot of these little quakes are telling us that that's what we're seeing, is the pre-release of the big one stress. So if USGS says 4th of October, hey, I'd go with that, but, you know, it may be a little bit later.
Time to bring out your wife Holly's books on preparedness, Stan.
Absolutely. The Dare to Prepare book. We've been getting a lot of orders for that recently, and I think people are waking up to a number of problems, not only earthquakes, you know, after the election.
Stan's website, StanDeyo, DEYO.com. Thank you, Stan. Four public schools and a Catholic school in a Cincinnati suburb closed Friday after a woman told police she was attacked overnight by a man dressed, what? As a clown who made threats against students. The school district said it took the action as a precaution. The district runs two elementary schools, a middle school and a high school. Europe's Rosetta probe has ended its mission to Comet 67P by crash landing onto the icy object surface on purpose. The mission control in Germany was able to confirm the impact that had occurred when radio contact to the aging spacecraft was lost abruptly. It was a 12-year successful mission. That's amazing. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center with us for his weekly report. Peter, what do we have?
Well, good evening, George. The night of the black moon. Boy, I'm still trying to figure out what the black moon is, but I'm not sure it's all that
shadows
idea to
things.
Be talking about earthquakes and UFOs on the night of a black moon. Boy, hardest job I had this week was trying to pare down my stack of reports from about a dozen or more down to a manageable number, but been a lot of really interesting reports come in. You know how much I like past sighting reports. This one comes from 57 years ago, Hobbs, New Mexico. A gentleman describes that in the spring of, he thinks it was 1959, he was in the fourth grade at the time. He was out on the playground during recess, and a bunch of his classmates were standing with their mouths agape, pointing up at the sky. Looked up, there were three bright, highly reflective orbs or spheres of some type or another orbiting around each other. Very, very interesting report that's posted to our website tonight. About 46 years later, a couple describe how they were driving through Grand Junction, Colorado, headed back to Texas. They were on Interstate 70, and her husband suddenly sneezed, woke her up from a sound sleep as she rode in the passenger seat. He was staring up through the windshield, and she looked up, and there was, the best way I can describe it, is a dark Death Star with yellow lights, yellow rectangular lights on the near side of it. She has no idea what that object was, but it was moving sideways directly above their car, a huge object, has no idea what it was, and it moved off to the east of them and crossed a set of mountains and disappeared from their sight. A little more recent than that, last Friday night, a gentleman got some very good video of a very strange cylindrical shaped object with flashing and strobing red and white lights. Was not a helicopter, clearly not any kind of conventional aircraft. I congratulate him for having gotten the video footage he did, which is available on our website. Very, very interesting sighting, and it's very close to the Joint Expeditionary Base that's located there in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Monday of this week, a young woman who's a security officer on a series of golf courses was just finishing up her shift. It was 5:20 in the morning this Monday, the 26th of September. She was staring up at the night sky and saw eight very peculiar-looking lights streaking across the sky from east to west. That rules out any kind of satellites.
Sure they does.
Almost invariably don't go to the west. Took off her night vision devices, and she could not see the objects. So she quickly put back the NVDs so she could see them, see the objects again. It was at that point that they suddenly just went from a random cluster of lights to a square formation and disappeared over the western horizon. Very interesting report. 2 days ago, a sighting in Ojo Caliente, New Mexico, gentleman saw a daytime sighting, 11:45 or thereabouts in the morning, saw a white object hovering motionless above him. and it was covered with a cloud. Usually in a case like that, the first thing we address is a helium-filled balloon, but it wasn't that. It just suddenly disappeared from his sight. And finally, last report from yesterday, Idlewild, California, just east of Hemet, not too far from where you are in California, gentleman saw a black speck, big enough so he could tell it was a perfect sphere, just streaking across the sky. Saw it for just a few seconds, but saw it long enough to be able to know that it was something very, very strange. So lots of stuff going on. We have 162 new reports on our website. Hope our listeners enjoy them.
You got it. Thanks, Peter. Great updates. Great updates indeed. In a moment, Demon Haunted, John Zaffis, and Rosemary Ellen Guiley join us. Scary times ahead on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. You are going to enjoy this. We're going to be talking about Demon Haunted. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is a leading paranormal researcher, investigator, author of more than 60 books, including the one that we wrote called Talking to the Dead. She has been doing groundbreaking research on the djinn, shadow people, negative hauntings, and black mirrors, and so much more. And also John Zaffis, a leading demonologist, paranormal investigator, has been a star of the Haunted Collector Show, and here he is on Coast to Coast as well. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, buddy. Good to be on. How are you?
Always a pleasure having you with us. And, of course, Rosemary, what can I say? I can't say enough about you.
Oh, thank you, George. It's great to be on, and it's great to be on again with Johnny.
Oh, sure is. Johnny? That's good. You two know each other.
Oh, long time now.
Yeah, you sure do. Well, we're going to talk about a lot of things, including haunted objects and just what's been going on. But, Rosemary, give us an update on your life, first of all, then we'll get to John.
It's been another busy year on the road, George. I've been traveling a lot, doing events, lectures, workshops. I launched my own radio show this summer, and it's been going very well. I cover the paranormal, ufology, and cryptozoology and metaphysics. I've been organizing events for abroad next year. I'm going to Australia and England. And just redesigned my website and got that launched as well.
Good for you.
So, and, of course, always new books in the works.
Well, you never stop working. How about you, John?
Well, doing good. Investigating, out lecturing, doing a lot of the conferences, and definitely keeping busy and keeping busy with Rosemary on working on books.
And tell me about this title, Demon Haunted.
Well, Rosemary came up with it, and again, we went back and forth over it, and I thought it was very interesting, and it's very catchy. And again, talking about some of the more darker type things that I get involved with, Rosemary's been involved with, and it pulled together and launched quite well.
And you know, Rosemary, I've known you for years. I mean years, when we started talking about the encyclopedia of dreams and angels and so much. Lately, over the last year or two, you've been dabbling very seriously on dangers from the other side, the dark side. Isn't that a little dangerous for you?
Well, it does have its dangers, and I think it does for anyone who gets involved in the field. But, George, I never went looking for this aspect of the work. It came looking
for you.
And when I started paranormal investigation very early in my career, I've been doing books and investigations and research now full-time since 1983. I was focused on a lot of entity contact experiences, and initially I was approaching what I would call the light side, you know, people having uplifting kinds of spiritual and mystical experiences. And of course, in the paranormal, you do start to get into the scarier things. And over the course of my investigations, I have found more and more really tough, persistent, negative cases landing on my doorstep. And maybe they found their way to me because of the nature of the research I was doing, especially with the djinn. Or maybe because other people didn't want to take them on, and I think John's been in the same position a lot. And so I started looking more and more into them. And I do believe that people need help in that area, and we also need a lot of education and resources. But there are times when the dark side gets to be, you know, pretty overwhelming, and you just kind of have to step back for a while, and it's easy to be overwhelmed in it. I've seen that happen to many investigators. That that term that we use, demon haunted, for the title, here again, it was kind of an educational thing too, because we wanted to acquaint readers with a broad range of troubling kinds of cases that haunt land, objects, and people that from an ancient perspective are called demon haunted. That is, troubling, pesky, to malicious spirits get involved in the affairs of human beings and stir up a lot of ruckus. And sometimes it's pesky things and annoying things. And other times it's just out and out terrorist kinds of assaults on people. And so these entities are a broad range of dispositions. It's not just the all-out malevolent evil kinds of beings that we associate with stories like The Exorcist.
Are you finding, Rosemary, that evil seems to be more prevalent now than it was a few years ago?
I do believe that's the case, George, and I think it is for a variety of reasons. For one thing, we have more people turning over rocks in the paranormal, even going out looking for these sorts of things. And we have had a great deal of attention focused on the spirit world, thanks to the media, reality TV, and the popularity of paranormal investigation. And I think that this has provided more opportunities for negative spirits to come through. Many people don't realize how vulnerable they can be. And so it is important to provide information that helps people maintain good boundaries.
And John, other than this great picture of you on the cover of Demon Haunted, these entities behind you are the scariest things I've seen in my life.
I know, they scare me too, George.
My gosh.
But with the cover, we were very fortunate. We were going back and forth over it. And Dan Leroy, a gentleman in my group, we threw it out at him, and he pulled that together, and in the very first viewing of it, Rosemary and I were thrilled to death with it.
Super. Now, you have been collecting haunted objects for a long time. How did you start, and what are they?
Well, I started, I think pretty close to 40 years ago, and as a teenager, I was fortunate. I did a lot of traveling around with Ed and Lorraine Warren, my aunt and uncle. And we were coming back, George, from a case, and it was they had been called in to a woman collected these little collectible statues, and she kept claiming this one statue was moving around, and she was petrified of it and everything, and it was removed. And as we were driving home, my uncle handed it to me, and he goes, "You want that?" I'm like, what the heck am I going to do with a haunted item, right? But knowing the way he thought in his process, he knew I would start researching things at that point in time. And, you know, we have haunted houses, haunted land, you know, and people, why not items? And again, that really got my curiosity up. And back then, you know, you had to go to get books to read on them. We didn't have the internet or anything. And, you know, people don't realize the many stories that are out there, but the most famous one would be the Hope Diamond. Very well known with the legend of cursing and being haunted. And once you mention that, people go, yeah, you're right. You know, haunted items have been around for a very long time. Now, over the course of the years, I put a barn up on the property, and I have a tremendous amount of the things that are in there today from investigations that I've removed, or other paranormal people have, or clergy or spiritual people, and they send them in. You know, I do bindings and prayers on them and put them into the museum.
The foreword from the book, of course, our dear friend Paul Eno, who is a researcher in his own right about the paranormal. We're going to come back in a moment with John Zaffis and Rosemary Ellen Guiley as we talk more about Demon Haunted right here on Coast to Coast AM. We've got some great stories for you. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines and you can ask them a question or two, or maybe even share a story. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast as we talk about Demon Haunted with John Zaffis, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. And John, let's get back into some of these haunted objects. Can people, the people who pick up these objects, does anything ever happen to them?
A lot of times, George, they do pick up the energy that is associated with the item. Now, again, especially things like the walking stick we talk about in the book, and the young man picked it up, and, you know, thinking it was just a very cool thing, he got very attached to it. And come to find out, with some of the symbols and things that were carved into it, was definitely telling me that the prior owner was someone that was into the occult. They did a lot of different type of practices. So again, when some of these items are affiliated with that, the energy that can be drawn to an item can remain with it and can get activated, so to speak, when another person picks the item up or they purchase it and it becomes intermingled with them. So again, yes, there's a lot of things that you would least expect that can have energy attached to it, especially on a negative level.
Tell us the story of the levitated man. What happened to him?
Well, a lot of times when these people go through these situations and these things occur and these things start to happen and you witness something like that, that changes your whole perspective when dealing with this. Like we were saying earlier, and Rosemary was mentioning, you know, dealing with this stuff on the darker side, it can take its toll on you, and sometimes you have to take a step back from working on it because it's no longer just a story, George. It becomes part of your reality once you witness a person levitating or, you know, seeing some of these things that these people go through. And once you witness it, it changes your entire perspective on everything.
Yeah, this person apparently picked up some kind of egg-shaped stone, and he was attacked by it, or something happened to him?
Yeah, go ahead, Rosemary.
That occurred to an investigator friend of ours, Justin Spurrier, and he bought a house that some people had died in. There were a lot of religious objects on the walls, a lot of crosses and crucifixes. The house had been almost preserved as a shrine in death, and people will do that. They'll preserve homes or rooms after someone passes away. And so he started clearing the house out so his family could move in, and one of the items that he found was this polished stone egg. It was kind of like an agate sort of thing that you might pick up in a shop somewhere, fit in the palm of his hands, and he thought it looked pretty cool, and he would take it home and show it to his kids. And so he let it sit outside for a while, forgot about it, and then he brought it in the house and kind of played a trick on his kids where he pretended that it had been a stone that had gotten polished overnight in a tumbler that he bought. I think that joke sort of angered the spirit that was attached to the stone. There was something attached to it. And so he stuck it in a chest drawer in his bedroom. And that night, he was bolted awake by the sight of something black shooting out of the drawer. The drawer was closed, and it shot straight out of the door, up into the air, and then started hurtling down on him. And what happened was he felt himself literally levitate up off the bed in this kind of arched back position. He was completely paralyzed and could not move. And it felt like there was like a python wrapped around him that was literally squeezing the breath out of him. And in situations like that where people have nighttime attacks that are suffocating and squeezing, they can't even cry out. About all you can do is call out in your mind for some spiritual help, which he did. And his wife was sleeping next to him. She was not waking up, and he kept praying for her to wake up. And suddenly he was able to break the grip of this thing, and he collapsed back onto the bed, and his wife woke up just in time to see him slam back onto the bed. So he was so rattled by that that he got a hold of friends and got a hold of a priest that night, and he was advised to take this thing out and bury it in the ground. And this is a very common way of of dealing with attached objects is to bind them in a way and bury them in the earth or throw them into deep running water. And so he buried it in his yard. I mean, personally, I would have gotten it off my property.
Oh, sure. I'd put it on the neighbors. No,
but
I'm kidding.
He buried it in his yard and had no more afflictions from it. But his dog kept digging it up. The dog was fascinated by this egg and kept unearthing it. And he would go into a panic and have to rebury it. And there's been no more trouble from this the spirit since it's been buried now, but it kept Justin on pins and needles for quite some time. There was something attached to this, and when it had a chance to act out, it attacked him in a very vicious way.
Frightening. Frightening indeed. Daunted. It's demon haunted. And these objects, though, Rosemary, are inanimate, and they're not alive. So how can something possess it or take over it?
Well, there are a number of ways that objects can acquire attachments of energy, and John mentioned that objects can acquire energy from previous owners, and we've seen literally residual energy from the dead linger with objects that they've used, like a ritual object or a favorite object they've worn a long time, like a piece of jewelry. And if their emotions are angry or unhappy or they've had a link to the spirit world in the case of a ritual activity, those sorts of things can affect a person. Objects can attach through activities, and people do attract spirits to them, and if we go through bad patches in life where we have a lot of upheaval and negative emotions, that can attract negative spirits into our life, and some of them have the capability of lodging onto our possessions and even the places where we live. These energies may reside dormant for a long period of time, and then if the right person comes along and sort of clicks with that energy, everything can spring to life in a very unexpected and sometimes ugly way.
John, when you have been collecting these objects, what has been one of the strangest haunted objects you've ever kept?
Probably getting involved in, George, I have to clean this story up the best I possibly
please,
can.
Please, please.
got a telephone call from a very prominent doctor up in Boston. She lived in, very prestigious area and everything, and she was telling me about the haunting that broke out. And we went up to investigate, myself and two of the other researchers, and she started referring to the dungeon being haunted. Well, you say dungeon to me, I think of suits of armor and swords and all kinds of things of that. And we went down and, we went into the room and were investigating it and found out that this particular doctor was very hardcore into dominatrix.
Aha, okay.
But, in light of investigating in some of these circumstances, George, she had an outfit made out of leather for her, and she had this particular person make it for her. Now, she had this in the upstairs part of the house, and she started having a tremendous amount of activity that was associated with it. It was brand new, and never worn or anything like that, but she started having a very negative type presence that broke out and was associated with this leather outfit, and she just wanted it removed from the home. So again, that's probably one of the most unique items that's ever been removed from an investigation that I've been involved with.
Strange indeed. Now, you had a heart attack last year, didn't you?
Yes, 2015, yep.
What the heck happened? Where were you?
Well, I was at home. I was in the process of purchasing a piece of property up in Massachusetts to move the museum. And I was had a very hectic schedule and everything. And I was back home and just basically working on things and coming back through. And, George, I just felt like, hands came around me, just grabbed me in my chest, and boom, I went right down. And it was just peculiar. The whole thing was peculiar. Something didn't feel right when I got up in the morning, and I just could not pinpoint it. I wasn't having any severe pain or anything, or to that point. But you know, the bizarre circumstances unfolded, you know, as the events were happening. I very seldomly talk to my wife during the day. She has a very tight schedule at work, and not usually don't talk to her till 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The phone rang, and I grabbed it. And I just kept telling her, "Come home, come home." And she's only like 10 minutes away from the house. And you know, again, with me, you know, we had a $500 deductible to call an ambulance. I said, "No way, Jose, put me in the car, and we're driving up there.
Oh my
it's only
God,
a mile away."
Jeez.
So, anyways, found out, you know, that during the process of that, it did occur, it did happen, and that I had one of the major arteries that was 90% blocked.
So in that case, stent time, or did they have to give you open heart surgery?
No, a stent was put in, and, you know, the following day, it was like just totally different, and, you know, it just everything was just totally different. But with that, George, it seems like over the course of several months, things started to change and things started to happen and occur as the process was going. As investigating and getting involved, I would start getting a lot of communication coming through from deceased relatives.
Hmm.
And, you know, there's been contact with a few of them prior, but it increased. And it would reach a point where the communications were so strong, coming through other investigators, people I didn't know, getting together with people, and different things would start to occur. And the most prominent one of all that was coming through was Ed Warren.
He was he's your uncle, right?
I know he's my uncle, but, you know, it reached a point where, you know, I'm trying to do investigations, and he would take over. And, he would just communicate and just keep coming through with EVPs and different communications and, you know, just these bizarre things. And it reached a point where the documentation, George, is well over 50 people that are having these things occur that are around. And it's just, you know, where I'm there at that point in time, not calling upon them, not, you know, doing anything to provoke that situation. And it'll reach a point and I'll go, "Ed, I'm trying to investigate here. I'm trying to find out what's here." And him and I will get into an argument, and you can hear it over some of the equipment. So, you know, again, I don't view it as something as a negative. I view it as something that I had to talk about this entire chapter, thanks to Rosemary, because she sat and listened to a couple of the audio tapes when I was with other people, and for Rosemary to sit and listen through an entire tape and not say anything, that's amazing.
That is amazing. We both know her.
Yes. Yes, and she just said, "John," she says, "you have to talk about this. You have to bring this to the forefront so people realize what's occurring and what's happening." But, George, even individuals that don't know me, don't know the family, or, you know, just basic acquaintances. And I was down in Gettysburg last year and with several people, and we were staying at this one place, and this one gentleman, Mark, he just started communicating and going back and forth, and the information that came through, George, there was no way for him to know it. There was no way for anybody to know any of this information pertaining to my family and relatives. It reached a point, George, where I just broke down and I had to walk out of the room.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. And Rosemary, let's get into your work, too, with spirit attachments. Are there any warning signs so people will know, hey, something's going to happen here?
Oh, yes. With objects, there are a lot of upfront warning signs. And what we see the same patterns over and over again, George, that people get attracted to an object. They'll walk by a store and see it in the window, like a secondhand shop, it'd be at a flea market. And something will jump out at them and just really grab their attention. And what they're reacting to is an unusual energy field around the object, and they're not really aware of that. It's just that something has grabbed their attention. And with that comes a fascination and even an obsession with owning and having the object. something they can't even explain to themselves. And sometimes the objects are not in very good condition, or sometimes they're even incredibly ugly, but they have to have it. And they don't realize on an unconscious level they're interacting with an energy and perhaps even a spirit presence that's attached to the object. So they bring it home, and then very quickly things start to happen. There may be poltergeist activity in the house where there has not been in the past, knocking on the wall, cold spots, breezes, shadow figures flitting about. They may experience nightmares that progress in terror and violent imagery. Their health may be affected. They may have runs of bad luck, start to hear voices inside their heads that they feel are not theirs. And things keep deteriorating until the source of the afflictions are identified and the object is removed from the environment.
And does it stay?
I will often take care of it.
Does it stay with the object if you remove the object?
Usually, yes. But we have had cases where the spirit has been able to make the leap literally from the object to a person. And I think that just depends on the unique circumstances of the case. If someone has the right vulnerability and an energy field that can serve as a host, because these spirits are parasites. They have to get energy from somewhere or something in order to be active. So there are cases where people can become possessed in varying degrees if something goes on long enough and a spirit is powerful enough. But usually when the afflicted object is neutralized and removed from the environment, then the problem comes to an end.
Where do we get the book Demon Haunted, Rosemary?
It's available on Amazon.com and in ebook format on Kindle, Nook, and Kobo. And John has it up on his website, and I have it up on my website, visionaryliving.com.
John, as a demonologist, did you have to take any special precautions to protect yourself?
Yes, George, absolutely. When dealing with the demonology, regardless of a person's faith base, I always believe that you definitely need to bring in on the positive level, and to definitely do things to be able to protect yourself. I'm Roman Catholic, so naturally my prayer is an extremely important thing for me. I believe there's a lot of power in prayer for calling upon angels or, you know, to be able to protect yourself. Because, again, you know, right across the board, when dealing with any spiritual people, shaman, Buddhist, rabbis, again, respecting and looking at their traditions on the way they do things and bringing the power of their prayer system in conjunction with yours a lot of times is very powerful, and it's something that is needed when you get involved with dealing with the demonology end.
Well, stay with us. We're going to have some more incredible stories from both of you. We're going to take some phone calls as well. Rosemary, as far as your work in the paranormal field, what do you do to protect yourself?
I think it's very important to have a daily spiritual practice, and meditation is one of the best ways to do that. Meditation, contemplation, prayer, where you are connecting with the spirit realm, a high source of spiritual strength. And that literally improves and strengthens the aura and the boundary around you. It's like going to the spiritual gym. And having that grounding and focus is central to having any sort of engagement with the negative side of the paranormal for people who do a lot of investigating. It's also important to be well-educated about the spirit world and know what's out there and how it's likely to act so you can recognize the pattern.
Well, stay strong. We're coming back next with your calls on Coast to Coast AM.